Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio. Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution Radio!
It is sad to think that sooner or later those you love will do the same for you. And you may have thought it tragic, not to mention other adjectives, to think of all the weeping they will do. But don't you worry, no more ashes, no more sackcloth, and an armband made of black cloth will someday nevermore adorn a sleeve. For if the bomb that drops on you gets your friends and neighbors too, there'll be nobody left behind to grieve, and we will all go together when we go. What a comforting fact that is to know. Universal bereavement, an inspiring achievement. Yes, we all will go together when we go. We will all go together when we go. All suffused with an incandescent glow. No one will have the endurance to collect on his insurance. Lloyd's of London will be loaded when they go.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, where I'm very pleased to be back on Revolution Radio again. I want to give you information about a presentation I did yesterday on the conspiracy guy. You can find it on BitChute, Jim Fetzer. I can give the link to Mitchell, and he can make it available. It's pretty fascinating stuff, where I did this show with Danny Siras, who has an extensive background in law enforcement and with whom I've done several previous shows. Super good guy. He particularly wanted me to include the pulling up the link. I've actually got it playing by inadvertence. So here we go. Let's see what I can do to get it squared away.
I think it's going to be pretty bloody obvious as we proceed. As most of you know, I'm a former Marine Corps officer. I'm a retired university professor. I've done...
For some reason, I'm not getting the response. Oh, it's a delay. My computer has been showing a delay. Now, the title of the show was Osama, Hunter, and Joe. Is Joe Biden morally and mentally fit for office? It has got a great deal to do with the revelations from the New York Post that the mainstream media is doing their very best to suppress, conceal, distort. Meanwhile, you know, they continue to attack Trump mercilessly, violating their own standards and guidelines, creating imaginatively reasons why they can't or cannot publish anything that's critical of Joe Biden. Just embarrassingly bad. But Danny was very insistent that I should include a story about this SEAL team member who's been going around the country. His name, Robert O'Neill, claiming that he was the guy who shot Osama bin Laden during the raid on the compound in Pakistan in 2011. Now, I knew the story was bogus from the beginning because I had, as the founder of Scholars for 9/11 Truth, been following all the Osama stories, Obama stories. We knew the Osama stories. We knew that Osama actually had been our man in Afghanistan. For those who do not know, you know, brace yourself. But Osama bin Laden had nothing to do with the events of 9/11. He was actually our man in Afghanistan. He was responsible for getting Stinger missiles into the hands of the Mujahideen, which they used to shoot down Soviet helicopters and planes to drive them out of the country. He actually was an officer in the CIA, Colonel Tim Osman. Yes, Osama bin Laden was in the CIA, where an official of the agency visited him in a hospital in Dubai shortly before his death from his medical maladies, where he died in Afghanistan. The principal reason, it's tough to get those dialysis machines in and out of those caves. I mean, the whole story has been completely ridiculous from the beginning, where he was buried in an unmarked grave in accordance with Muslim tradition. There were local obituaries. In fact, there was both Fox News and CNN, both Fox and CNN, on the 26th of December, 2001, reported that Osama bin Laden was dead. So do you think Barack Obama didn't know when he revived Osama to have him die a second time during this completely staged raid on the compound in Pakistan, so he could position himself for a triumphal reelection? I mean, the corruption and duplicity of these people is simply overwhelming. Overwhelming. Now, what's complicated here is that we got the CIA whistleblower who's implicated Joe Biden, Hillary Clinton, and Barack Obama in various malfeasance, but where they're claiming, and this is the most absurd part of the story, that Iran was harboring Osama bin Laden, which I guarantee you is categorically false, that Iran was responsible for threatening to blow the story if they weren't given a massive sum of money, and thereby to explain away the $150 billion that was returned to Iran when that $150 billion was Iran's own money that had been frozen by the United States improperly. If you go back and trace the whole history of the story, it turns out our own intelligence agencies, meaning the big three, really, the NSA, the CIA, and the FBI, had all agreed that Iran was not pursuing nuclear weapons in 2007, a conclusion they reaffirmed in 2011. Even the Mossad, believe it or not, came aboard in 2012 and agreed that Iran was not pursuing nuclear weapons just weeks before Bibi Netanyahu went to the United Nations and asserted precisely the opposite. So here we have Gary Franchi breaking the story. Maybe I can play a part of it and you can hear it. Let me see.
My friends, we have a bombshell news report, a whistleblower, a CIA whistleblower, dropping hard evidence that implicates Biden, Obama, Hillary, Brennan, that they actually executed SEAL Team 6 and covered it up, and there is audio, video, and documentary proof. But before I get into this, if you're new here...
Well, let me say what he's talking about there is the death of SEAL Team 6 appears to be correct, that it was they used a SEAL team to run the operation in Pakistan. But that, of course, meant that since Osama had already been dead for a decade, they knew they had not killed Osama bin Laden. Now, let me give you a little background here about zero, the whole history of this thing, which is pretty fascinating in and of itself. I publish a piece, Zero Dark 30, The Deeper, Darker Truths, really in the aftermath of the Academy Award nomination for Best Picture in 2001, this film Zero Dark 30 that was supposed to have traced the raid on the compound in Pakistan. Instead, it's actually glorifying a political stunt. It's based on an historical fiction. It's simply the latest in Obama propaganda. Osama bin Laden was not killed on May 2011 during the raid on a compound in Pakistan. He actually died in Afghanistan on or about 15 December 2001, and he was buried there in an unmarked grave. Local obituaries reported Osama's death at the time. Even Fox News subsequently confirmed it, as did CNN. He was buried in an unmarked grave in accord with Muslim tradition. He did not die in Pakistan. Nick Kohlerstrom, who's a distinguished historian of science from the UK, with whom I've done a lot of collaborative ventures, has published about it. Osama bin Laden, 1957 to 2001. David Ray Griffin has a book about it, Osama bin Laden, Dead or Alive. And Scholars for 9/11 Truth, which I founded, has written about it. When you had the official account about the raid on the compound in Pakistan in 2011, there were problems. Local residents had never seen Osama. They identified the man in the photograph who's holding a television remote control, a clicker, as the compound's owner, who has not bin Laden. The SEALs performed their task and were gone. Now, a photograph of the president, Barack Obama, the vice president, Joe Biden, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, was widely circulated as engrossed in watching it go down in real time. But the photo itself would turn out to have been staged. Leon Panetta, director of the CIA, let the cat out of the bag by noting that there had been no visual coverage of the raid during its first 20 to 25 minutes, which was more than the lapsed time for the whole event. The body was allegedly identified by DNA comparisons in less time than scientifically possible and was then dumped into the sea in accordance with Islamic practice, which was a ridiculous contention. Muslims are far more respectful of the body. Dumping it into the sea would mean that crustaceans, sharks, fish could nibble at the body. I mean, it's just ridiculous, but it shows how effortlessly the deep state of the government can play upon the ignorance of the American people. Here now from Nick Kohlerstrom's piece, you can find it on my blog, Osama bin Laden, 1957 to 2001. He begins thusly. In Orwell's novel 1984, there's a figure called Emmanuel Goldstein who functions as an all-purpose enemy, even though we gather that he may actually have died some time ago. Osama bin Laden has been used in a similar manner by the powers that be by a process of identity theft during the last days of his life. In reality, there have been no sightings or reports of him since 2001. I, Nick Kohlerstrom, here argue that he died on or around December 15, 2001, in consequence of the intensive bombing of his then residence in the Tora Bora Caves of eastern Afghanistan, and that he had no involvement in the events of 9/11. Well, Nick and I certainly agree that he died on or around December 15, that he had no involvement in the events of 9/11. Nick, however, attributes his death to the intensive bombing, I to his medical maladies. Meanwhile, a section of his blog, Osama bin Laden, Warrior of God or CIA Access. It's a life which needs to become a film, a transcontinental drama. But any filmmaking such could expect a glowing future. Far safer to make a film of the boogeyman we all know and fear, but who never existed. the Sunday Times, that would be the London Sunday Times, in March 2007, had a 9-page article about where he might be lurking, and now no one had been able to find the most wanted man in the world. It gave not the slightest hint that he might have died 5 years before, actually, I would say six. Christina Lamb, the invisible man, the Sunday Times magazine, who is hiding the world's most wanted man? You see, this is a propaganda piece that they planted to make you think he was somewhere around the world, but no one knows where he really is, so that they can do what they want with the alleged mastermind of 9/11 still somewhere to be found. Pakistan was blamed as though it could have hidden him through the years, even though he was over 6'6" tall and his distinctive appearance was known all around the world. The article conceded that the last positive sighting of Osama bin Laden had been in the December 2001 U.S. attack upon Tora Bora. I, Nick Kohlerstrom, did a book review concerning the speeches and videos allegedly produced by OBL, messages from bin Laden suggesting that all of them from 2002 onwards were faked. Now, Danny, to my astonishment, actually produced a photo I'm looking at right here where you can see Osama bin Laden with Condoleezza Rice. You can see Osama bin Laden with Hillary Clinton. You can see Osama bin Laden with Barack Obama. I mean, these are all photographs that appear to be completely authentic. So you get the idea of how much he was our man in Afghanistan. Meanwhile, on the 28th of May, 2006, I, as the chairman of Scholars for 9/11 Truth, published a piece, Osama tape appears to be fake, experts conclude. U.S. government fabricating evidence to manipulate American public, scholars say. Duluth, Minnesota, 28 May, 2006. The latest audio tape attributed to Osama bin Laden appears to be one more installment in a succession of evidence fabricated by the U.S. government to deceive the American people, according to Scholars for 9/11 Truth. This date is only the latest in a series of fabrications intended to mislead the American people, said James H. Fetzer, the Society's founder. The closer we get to revealing the truth about 9/11, the more furiously the government fights to conceal it. He said members of Scholars and other experts had detected evidence of fakery. In this new recording, a voice attributed to Osama bin Laden asserts that Zacharias Moussaoui was not involved in 9/11, which he knew to be the case because he had personally assigned the 19 hijackers involved in those events. The Osama of this tape thereby implicitly confesses his responsibility for orchestrating the attacks. However, in a tape released on December 27, 2001, the authenticity of which is not in doubt, and notice that would have been shortly after his death in Afghanistan, Osama denied having had anything to do with 9/11. Moreover, some of the 19 hijackers he personally assigned have turned out to be alive and well. In fact, David Ray Griffin in his magisterial, The 9/11 Commission Report, Omissions and Distortions, makes that his very first point, to which a half a dozen or more of these guys turned up alive and well the following day and made contact with the British media. To be sure, you know, Americans really are incapable of thinking these things through, it would appear. Needless to say, the FBI, in spite of this proof, has never revised the original list of 19, which was purportedly found in a suitcase by the leader of the gang who was, forgetful, left his luggage behind when he caught a flight from Logan. I mean, it's just outrageous. Meanwhile, to be sure, the new tape is not the first one in which bin Laden appears to take responsibility for the attacks. As David Ray Griffin, a prominent member of Scholars, points out, the Osama on the videotape that appeared on December 13, 2001, confessed to planning the 9/11 attacks, but he is far darker and much heavier than the real Osama bin Laden. People can see the difference by looking up the fake Osama bin Laden videotape on Google. I doubt you would find it there today. Meanwhile, Griffin's point is supported by a work in progress by members of Scholars for 9/11 Truth, which appears on its website under the heading 9/11 Have We Been Lied To? It offers evidence of fakery in some of the videos based on various physical properties of the figures presumed to be Osama, pointing out there are differences in the ears, the cheeks, the eyebrows, the length of the nose, the shape of the nostrils. The use of computer analysis can fine-tune these questions of facial characteristics, but the gross differences already show they are not the same. Another problem with a video of December 13th, and notice this would be shortly before the date that Nick and I both believe he actually died, was that it's stocky bin Laden praised two of the alleged hijackers, Waleed al-Sharari and Salem al-Hazi, by name, and yet both the London Telegraph and the Saudi embassy reported several days after 9/11 that al-Hazmi was still alive and working in Saudi Arabia. Given the fact the earlier video on which Osama confessed was clearly a fake, we shouldn't be suspicious of this latest apparent confession. A professor at Duke, Bruce Lawrence, who has published messages to the world, the statements of Osama bin Laden, expressed profound skepticism about a tape that was released on January 17, 2006, in a report that appeared 2 days later. There's nothing in this from the Quran, Lawrence said. He's, by his own standards, a faithful Muslim who quotes scripture in defense of his actions. There's no quotation from the Quran in the excerpts we have, no reference to specific events, no reference to past atrocities. Lawrence also observed the tape ran only 10 minutes, whereas the shortest previous tape at 18 minutes was nearly twice as long. Fetzer noted many of the same anomalous properties are found in the latest tape compared to Osama's past performances, he observed. This message is too short, too direct, and full of falsehoods. It was even described on CBS News by Bob Schaefer as almost American. A translation of the text of the tape has also been released by Intel Center, a private company that has contract work for the U.S. government. I suppose I would be accused of being a conspiracy theorist to suggest there is any connection, Fetzer added. Meanwhile, the demise of SEAL Team 6 was a cover-up. Joe participated in the fake photo watching the raid occur in real time. Obama, Hillary, and Joe were concerned the truth might emerge. Joe revealed the identity of SEAL Team 6 as having conducted the raid, set them up to be shot down, even using an old Vietnam-era chopper. So here you have when DJHJ Media Explosive Update, CIA whistleblower, exposes Biden's alleged role with the deaths of SEAL Team, claims to have documented proof, breaking. In this article is a full interview of CIA whistleblower Alan Harrow Parrott, who's being interviewed by Charles Woods and Nicholas Noe. It surfaced on Sunday and shows the three talking about the blackmail extortion of $152 billion U.S. dollars that was sent to Iran to cover up the deaths of SEAL Team 6 by the Obama-Biden administration. Now, I'm telling you, this is nonsense. Iran had nothing to do with Osama. Never had control of him. The money was Iran's own money. There was no blackmail by Iran. This all appears, therefore, to be deep black intelligence that's intended to smear Iran. Parrott, a former CIA agent, remember they say once CIA, always CIA, though there may be occasional exceptions of whom I know at least two, has extensive experience with the intelligence community, and he's planning on releasing documents this week on what he said are going to uncover numerous crime sprees. The following are updates unfolded since the article was originally published. Update of the 13th, President Trump retweeted this article on the 12th. The maker of the video below toward the end of the article confirmed in this footage that the documents have now been delivered to a congressperson for review. Now, here we see an image. I can see, you can't, but you will if you watch the show. The operator, Rob O'Neill, opens up in a new book. This was actually an interview he did where the article about it was published on April 25th, 2017. Now, Rob O'Neill is the guy who claims to have been the SEAL who shot Osama bin Laden twice in the face. for that has been idolized. He's appeared on national television. He has a book. He's making lots of money off of it. But the story is complete baloney. It's bullshit. This video of the CIA whistleblower surfaces on what the Trump campaign reminds us is the eighth-year anniversary of when Democrat Joe Biden lied in a debate about the security needs of the Americans in Benghazi. Nicholas Noah, a military veteran, is the one who brought the three together and suggested in the video the reason he ended up running into Parrott was that he was researching why it appears as if the American government wanted all the people connected to with Benghazi to die. Now, based upon my own previous research, I can confirm Hillary Clinton concealed the fact that they were under attack. The American general in the area who could have sent aid to their assistance and saved their lives with a high probability was not informed by Hillary. This was a deliberate effort on her part to allow them to die. Meanwhile, in part of a Tucker Carlson show, some of the details of Parrott's testimony seems to be confirmed. Flashback. One day after Osama bin Laden was killed, that's according, we're talking about the fake raid on the compound in 2011, Joe Biden publicly outed the Navy SEALs. 90-plus days later, the Taliban shot down a U.S. helicopter, killing 15 SEAL Team 6 warriors and 23 others. Now, that part is all completely correct. Meanwhile, you see, it's all completely outrageous how they mix together the true and the false. But if you want to know, Joe Biden was giving out the information about the SEAL team where the Taliban and putting them in an old chopper so the Taliban could shoot them down, silence them, because dead men tell no tales. Meanwhile, I now turn to the New York Post, publishing exposés about Hunter and influence peddling. We have a photo showing Hunter asleep with a crack pipe dangling from his mouth. Hunter has a history of alcoholism, cocaine, and crack cocaine addiction. Hunter's connections were used to gain access to the Obama White House. Big, big deal, this New York Post story. More when we return from the break.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyalty? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me death!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given rights, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point. on Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw, hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, in Studio B at revolution.radio.
¿Cómo va? This is Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. I pulled some strings and gotten you front row seats to my new show, The Perfect Triangle. Live Friday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio Studio A. The Perfect Triangle is equilateral, three sides of the same length. In an angry, bipolar world, three perfect sides reveal many truths.
Body, mind, and spirit.
Thought, word, and deed.
Conspiracy, propaganda, and truth.
Natural health, allopathic tyranny, and your body.
Freedom, globalism, and sovereign nations.
And so much more. Each week, the Perfect Triangle will blast through fake news lies, champion the natural way and natural law, unravel the Orwellian deceptions of our corrupt government, reveal the satanic evil of globalist banks and transnational corporations. Tune in every Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, to Revolution Radio Studio A for thoughtful discussions with free thinkers. Your calls are always welcome. The Perfect Triangle, with Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Join me, won't you?
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Pretty fascinating stuff coming from the New York Post, which actually is doing a more adequate job of presenting important, authentic news to the American people than the New York Times. Among their observations, lying comatose in bed with what appears to be a crack cocaine pipe hanging out of his mouth, the shocking new photo of Hunter Biden isn't exactly what Democrat image shapers will have had in mind as they consider how to introduce Americans to the family they hope will be moving into the White House. October surprise is what U.S. politics watchers call a last-minute upset to a November presidential election. Yesterday, it was the turn of Joe Biden's campaign to receive one after compromising emails and photos purportedly from his troubled son Hunter's laptop, not only highlighted Hunter's drug problems, but appeared to show him introducing his father to a controversial Ukrainian energy firm. Other material extracted from the computer, but not yet released by the Republicans, reportedly includes a raunchy 12-minute video that appears to show Hunter smoking crack cocaine while engaged in a sex act with an unidentified woman, as well as numerous other sexually explicit pictures, some of which are extremely serious. And here, the photograph of Hunter has now gone viral. Probably most of you have seen it. It's no secret that Hunter, 50, has had considerable personal problems, as President Trump has repeatedly mentioned during this election campaign. The twice married father of five, one child by a former stripper, has a decades-long history of alcoholism and cocaine addiction, as well as crack cocaine abuse. He was thrown out of the U.S. Navy Reserve after failing a drug test. Joe Biden himself has said, "My son, like a lot of people we know at home, had a drug problem. He's overtaken it. He's fixed it," which is pretty obvious not the case, even if the shocking new images will hardly tell well-informed voters anything they didn't already know. They are unlikely to bolster Mr. Biden's image as a wholesome alternative to the current president. However, while Hunter has a controversial business record, Republicans have previously struggled to show his father was involved in it. This is really quite telling. According to the Post, the emails reveal that Hunter Biden introduced his father, then U.S. Vice President, to a senior executive at the Ukrainian energy company Burisma less than a year before Mr. Biden put pressure on government officials there to sack a prosecutor who was investigating the business. Among the emails is a message of thanks for the opportunity to meet your father from Vadim Pozharsky, an advisor to Burisma's board. Meanwhile, the computer guy who discovered all of this had his identity revealed. He won't state whether he sent the data to the FBI or gave it to Rudy Giuliani, but Rudy has confirmed that, in fact, he did. Hunter brought in three damaged laptops, never returned for them. John Paul McIsaac was worried he might even be taken out over this. Here's part of the story about him. I found Hunter's emails, and I feared I would be murdered. Trump voter reveals he's the Mac repairman with Biden secrets, but can't say if he went to the FBI or they came to him, or how Rudy Giuliani ended up with him. John Paul McIsaac confirmed that he had handed the laptop to the FBI late last year, claiming to the Daily Beast that he was just a guy who had something he wanted taken out of this shop after realizing he had the Democrat candidate's son's pictures and email. The younger Biden left three damaged Apple laptops at Mac Isaacson's shop in Wilmington, Delaware, in April of 2019, but never returned or paid the $85 bill for recovering the data from them. On Wednesday, their contents began to be revealed by the New York Post after being given to the newspaper by Rudy Giuliani, the president's personal lawyer. The emails appear to show that Hunter Biden introduced his father to his business partner in Ukraine, but that has been denied repeatedly by the Biden campaign, who said that no such meeting was found in his schedules from 2015 when the email suggested it happened. Well, this is ridiculous. Obviously, he didn't have it written down in his formal schedule. I mean, this is a typical kind of misleading the public by making a claim that's true, but doesn't actually respond to the issue of having the meeting. No doubt he had the meeting. Otherwise, the executive wouldn't be thanking Hunter for arranging the meeting. McLean created new confusion and questions over how the content wound up. We got a picture of the fellow. He's dressed like a Scotsman. Here we have the data recovery. We fix Max. This is an ad for his shop. How it got there. McIsaac offers data recovery services at his store in Wilmington, Delaware. Hunter Biden simply walked in with three damaged laptops. Two had water damage, one had a sticky keyboard, but he never returned to retrieve them. Now, Rudy Giuliani has done a very thorough job in about a half-hour report that we embedded in the show we did yesterday, which, as I observed, is already available on BitChute, where I've given Mitchell the link. We already knew about Biden in Ukraine, of course, threatening to withhold $1 billion in U.S. foreign aid if the prosecutor were not fired, where he gave him 6 hours to file the prosecutor before flying back to the U.S., where the prosecutor was fired, and Joe even boasted about it at the Consul on Foreign Relations. This was a classic quid pro quo of which Trump was wrongly accused, but where Joe Biden was clearly guilty. I mean, it's really amazing how he boasted about it. Here's a very brief video where he talks about it. Let's see if we can pick up the sound. You'll hear Joe boasting about his action, amazingly bragging about it in public.
I remember going over convincing our team, our others, to convincing that providing for loan guarantees. And I went over, I guess, the 12th, 13th time to Kyiv, and I was supposed to announce that there was another $1 billion loan guarantee. And I had gotten a commitment from Poroshenko and from Yatsenyuk that they would take action against the state prosecutor, and they didn't. So they said they were walking out to press conference. I said, I'm not going to, we're not going to give you $1 billion. They said, you have no authority. You're not the president. The president said, I said, call him. I said, I'm telling you, you're not getting $1 billion. I said, you're not getting $1 billion. I'm going to be leaving here. I think it was, 6 hours. I looked, I said, I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money. Well, son of a bitch. Got fired. And they put in place someone who was solid.
Right. Someone who is solid, meaning somebody who wouldn't investigate Burisma, where his son Hunter had a cushy job for which he was completely unqualified. I mean, really, how outrageous. Most of you have almost certainly seen this report where Biden's at the Council on Foreign Relations. We also embedded it in our Sunday program. There's a whole lot to go on here. Just to be clear, the heart of the cover-up is not Joe Biden's denial of a meeting with Vladimir Pozyrinsky. Burisma advisor Pozyrinsky thanked Hunter Biden for an opportunity to meet your father in the email sent in 2015, according to the stash of data given to the New York Post. 11 months after this meeting that Biden claims never happened, Joe Biden used his political muscle as vice president of the United States to demand that Ukraine's president fire Ukraine's chief prosecutor, Viktor Shokin. Shokin had previously led an investigation into Burisma's owner. Expect the next phase of this to be media acting in unison to claim the emails are phony. One wonders how the images on the same computer of Hunter Biden in sexually explicit acts and using drugs were faked as well, or how they constructed what appear to be 40,000 fake emails. Now, the question has been asked, how did Hunter simply forget that he left them there? Well, McIsaacson has said that he was drunk when he came in. He may have been high, but the fact is that it just disappeared from his memory. Giuliani has summarized the evidence. He did quite a good job of it. The former prosecutor confirms the data came from Hunter's own hard drive. The abandoned property became the possession of the repair company. Joe has been involved in corrupt schemes with Iraq, Russia, Ukraine, and China. Massive and detailed proof of operations of the Biden crime family. Now, here we have Rudy. I'll just play a couple minutes of this. This whole thing is included.
Welcome to Rudy Giuliani's Common Sense. This is another episode, and this is a very important one. We're going to summarize the state of the evidence at this point against the Biden crime family. It's really mounted up since the disclosures of the emails and texts and photographs of Hunter Biden. And now things that were proven by witnesses, documents, and videotapes that were ignored and lied about by the press are now proven by Hunter Biden's own words. Let me assure you that this is his hard drive. It was given to my lawyer by the gentleman who had repaired it. It had been left behind by, he says, a drunken Hunter Biden who came in and had a very hard time even signing and did describe what he wanted. He came back one time to supply a keyboard. And then after it was repaired, he never returned, even though there was substantial notices to return. After a while, when the gentleman heard things on the news suggesting that the Bidens may or may not have been involved in criminal activity, he became very concerned that possibly he was holding some kind of illegal material. So it was now his property, according to the contract signed by Hunter Biden, which we have right here. The property was abandoned. And property that's abandoned under the law becomes the property of the person that's in possession of it. So he had every right to listen to what was there and look at what was there, and he was shocked. What he saw, he says, were clear evidence of crime, clear evidence that the Bidens were lying over and over again. And then on the photographs, clear evidence of criminal activity and some activity that I probably would have a hard time describing and really should be left to more private discussion. In short, what the photographs display is a Hunter Biden who is a very serious, I would say, degenerate crack addict. What that means is he doesn't get rehabilitated. When he goes into rehabilitation, there are even pictures of him going out at night and smoking crack. So it looks like all during the period of time we're talking about, when he was making millions and millions and millions of dollars, there would be pictures of him
sitting
in a closet smoking dope engaged in sex while smoking crack with the woman, sometimes on his own. It proves without any doubt that none of this money was intended for Hunter Biden, because nobody would pay this guy $10. I mean, you couldn't be sure if you gave him $10 to go get a bottle of milk for you, he'd come back. So there's no way that some of the biggest criminals in the world are going to be paying him 10 to 14 million or 30 million or investing in a $1.5 billion completely ridiculous private equity fund. So what commodity did Hunter have to sell? Not pretty easy, isn't it? The vice presidency of the United States, which his brother, which his uncle and Joe's younger brother had been doing for the prior 20 years. And that's why this is a crime family. I know their name's not Italian, but you know, crime, this RICO statute applies to political corruption. It applies to white collar crime. I am the first one to really use it to effectively bring down the mafia drug dealers, the Teamsters Union, the Fulton Fish Market, the private carding industry, and then Wall Street. And then after that, the United States congressmen and a substantial number of New York City officials and New York State officials, Republican and Democrat. Probably that's what got me elected mayor. Didn't do it for that reason, but that's what made me well-known in New York and taught me what was wrong with New York. So I know this statute backwards and forwards, and this is a perfect case for it, because this Biden family was engaging in the business of crime. And their commodity, Joe's public office. And Joe, you will see, shared in the proceeds, which is clearly admitted by his co-conspirators. So let me outline it for you so that you'll be able to follow all of this. And there'll be more than what I'm just saying, but I'm picking, you know, four that will get the most prominence. And we're going to focus on when he was vice president of the United States, because that's where the big money was made. Before he was vice president of the United States, he made substantial amounts of money through the lobbying of his brothers, the fact that his son had a no-show job for the major bank in Delaware, and Joe Biden was the only Democratic senator that lobbied in favor of banks against easing the bankruptcy laws, because all Democrats were in favor of that. So theoretically, they like to say they represent poor people. Well, Joe was representing the rich bank that was employing his son in a no-show job, which is how his drug addict son began his career, because nobody else would employ him, because he'd be out 2-3 days a week, you know, looking for crack. It's a terrible problem, and I don't mean to pick on Hunter for being an addict. That's a terrible affliction. As a father, I blame Joe Biden. I say to myself, I don't know, if I had a child afflicted by that, wouldn't I take care of them and keep them in rehabilitation? And would I expose them to the most crooked man in the Ukraine, one of the most crooked people in China, to probably the most crooked woman in Russia? Would I do that to a drug addict son just because of greed? I don't know. I think this is Joe Biden's fault. But in any event, I have outlined four transactions here. And these are the principal players that we can identify from the analysis we've done so far of the text and the emails and the photographs. And I have to say, we've analyzed about a quarter of it, because it's very, very extensive. So what you have, very simply, and I'll summarize them really quickly, is let's call this Joe the point man. Obama was very, very comfortable with that designation, point man. So when we were negotiating to end our role in Iraq, it was really, really critical for the national security interests of the United States that we retain troops there. so that we could keep Iran from basically just creating an extension of the Islamic Republic of Iran's empire. And Joe Biden was sent to do that. Now, that was probably a very foolish decision by President Obama, because Joe Biden honestly had never succeeded at any negotiation ever. Robert Gates, his co-cabinet member in the Obama administration, probably commenting on this and any number of other things, including his opposition to killing bin Laden, said that Joe Biden had never been correct on any matter of foreign policy in his entire life. That's a quote from his fellow cabinet member. Well, he went to Iraq. He was supposed to negotiate this agreement that the Iraqis would allow 10 to 20,000 American troops to stay behind and have immunity from prosecution so they couldn't be get caught in the crossfire between the Sunnis, the Shia, and the other elements there. Of course, he failed. But the Biden crime family came out of it really good, really, really good. James, his brother, who had no experience in housing, was all of a sudden miraculously made part of a $1.5 billion, seems like a convenient number for them, $1.5 billion housing deal in China, in Iraq. And of course, like Hunter, James had no experience in building houses. He was a sleazy lobbyist on K Street. And I say sleazy advisedly because it's all over the newspapers if you care to ask. And every time it would come up, Joe would say, I don't know my family's business. After a while, that becomes kind of an incredible answer, doesn't it? Well, then, of course, we have the Russian situation. So that's the Iraq situation. The money goes from his brother. And as you will see, about half that money will end up in the pocket of Joe Biden, as well as James will be responsible for some of the Biden family expenses because Joe didn't pay for much. This would be a good time to take a short break. If you want a good cigar.
Yeah, it's kind of fascinating that Rudy does a cigar commercial here. Now, you get the idea of what's going on here. He was reporting, and this, in my opinion, is one of Rudy Giuliani's better moments. I'm convinced he was complicit in the events of 9/11. He had done a lot of good work cleaning up crime in New York City and made it a livable environment once again, very appropriate, even family friendly, whereas in the past Times Square area had been dominated by strip joints and bars. But now, with regard to all this evidence, and it involves transactions not only in Iraq, but in Russia, in Ukraine, and in China, Facebook has been moving to reduce the reach of the damning Hunter reports. Twitter has joined the effort to censor publications discussing it all. The Washington Post absurdly claimed Joe never pressured Ukraine when we have him performing at the Council on Foreign Relations. Orwellian character of doublespeak in their ministries of truth. All this going on, which is getting a fair amount of attention in the alternative press. Now, what Rudy was alluding to, that he couldn't even describe, was that there are evidently videos there that show Hunter torturing and raping young Chinese girls. This is there. Here's one of the headlines. Confirmed, Trump has footage of Hunter Biden raping and torturing little girls set to be released. I'm telling you, this is serious stuff. Now, here's a fascinating angle that you may have never considered, but for my raising it here, namely, get this. Being pro-Trump has cost me more grief than being Osama bin Laden's niece. Why do I support Donald Trump? Look at his record. By Noor bin Laden. Americans are, in my experience, she writes, the warmest, most kind-hearted, and open-minded people in the world. I have found this to be true for my whole life, despite being the niece of Osama bin Laden and sharing the same last name, albeit spelled slightly differently. Americans base their judgment on the content of someone's character and actions, not the color of their skin or their last name. This was reaffirmed last month after I voiced my love for America and support for President Trump. The response to my letter to America has been overwhelmingly wonderful. I'm most thankful to all those who took the time to read and send kind messages. But in my private life, I have lost a few so-called friends for backing Donald Trump over the past 5 years. Coming out publicly was a step too far for some, and the vitriol I received for stating my political beliefs revealed unflattering sides to certain characters. From a sociological standpoint, it's quite interesting that in some elitist circles, being pro-Trump has caused me more grief than carrying the name Bin Laden. Even more striking were the contrasting reaction of President Trump's COVID diagnosis. Gleeful comments devoid of compassion flooded social media, some going so far as to wish for his death. Kim Jong-un showed more sympathy than many of the president's detractors. Yet for all the hate, there was an outpouring of love and well wishes from his supporters. One take from a favorite Twitter account of mine expressed it best. Trump is the first and only president I've actually cared about. That's because he's the first president in recent memory who seems to care more about Americans than an abstract ideology or just enriching his donors. This sentiment is clearly felt by many Americans who came out in droves for the president wherever he goes, including Walter Reed Medical Center during his stay. If he can't hit the road, the rally comes to him. And why do I support Donald Trump? Look at his record. He stood up to China, kept America out of new wars, solidified ties with Israel, overturned the disastrous Iran deal, and obliterated ISIS. Domestically, he removed handicapping regulations to American economic growth, rebuilt a depleted military, brought back manufacturing, revamped dying industries by renegotiating trade deals and cutting taxes. He's achieved energy independence, curbed immigration, all of which contributed to setting record unemployment rates. He's tackled neglected issues such as human trafficking and unjust incarceration and giving America a chance at restoring her principles, pride, independence, and true place in the world as a beacon of liberty and hope from all. Amazing. From the niece of Osama bin Laden. I'll take your calls, of course, during the second hour. Mitchell is standing by. The number 540-352-4452. 540-352-4452. I'll be here looking forward to hearing from you. We're about to hit the break. But I just say, I wanted you to hear that Osama bin Laden's niece has had more grief for supporting Trump than for being the niece of the man wrongly described as the mastermind of 9/11.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. But time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
Who owns you? If you're not in control, then someone else is. Join me, Ivy West, for Voices on the Wind, Saturday. I discuss government, health, metaphysics, suppressed science, universal mysteries, little-known incredible facts, alternative energies, and even more than you can imagine.
There was blood on the wire.
Won't you join us on Revolution Radio Saturdays for Voices on the Wind with me, Ivy West.
There are lives in the balance, people under fire.
Because if your head's in the sand, your tail is a target.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out "And Nobody Died in Boston Either." Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, unsurprisingly, we have one of our most frequent and active callers on the line, Paul from California. Join the conversation, my friend.
I don't know what I could possibly say. What comes to mind is the infamous words of Claude Rains in Casablanca, where he said, "I'm shocked. I'm shocked."
Yes, 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 of course. Shock that gambling should be taking place in this venue when he's being handed his rewards from gambling. We love it. That's one of the great movies of history.
Well, I got to tell you, I was going to lead with some humor. In fact, I texted Giuseppe my opening line where I was going to say, in defense of Hunter Biden, crack does. And
that is in great defense, funny, Paul.
I haven't delivered the line yet. In defense of Hunter Biden, crack does enhance the overall sexual experience.
I'll take your word for it, my friend.
Yeah, what can possibly be said? You know, the whole thing is just sleazy beyond belief. I have this joke, which I've not really used before, but it goes like this. What does corruption look like in a country where Jews are not in control? Well, it would be just bribing and giving bags of cash to police and politicians to, you know, either look the other way or do what you want them to do. But when you have corruption in a country with Jews in control, then it looks like, filmed encounters with underage boys and girls. That's exactly what we have here. And it's, to be honest, beneath us all. I'm sick of it. It's not like the Lincoln-Douglas debates, is it? You know, when you think of the long line of presidential, of presidents and candidates we've had, Washington, Jefferson, Adams, Jackson, Lincoln, so on and so forth, do you really want to include either one of these names? Yes, obviously Trump is preferable, but this whole thing, I just feel like I need a shower. Thanks.
Well, have a shower, Paul. I mean, that's... Remember, we were addressing whether Joe Biden is morally and mentally fit for office. It looks as though we're going to have the third debate, where the second was canceled when it went virtual, on Thursday. I assume they're going to bring out the body double once again. I think it would be a little too conspicuous if they did not do that. Whereas I imagine I reported before, but gladly report again, we had already heard they had the questions in advance. We'd already heard that Joe had a skull implant so he could get direct transmissions to his ear without the need for a wire. And most strikingly, we'd already had the report that they had requested breaks after every 30 minutes of the 90-minute event. And when it was turned down, that, I believe, is when they decided to send out the body double. Remember, we have the defection of a staff member who reported that Joe Biden is on anti-dementia medication, an unfortunate side effect of which is incontinent. So they've actually had staff meetings debating which type of adult diaper Joe Biden ought to be wearing that would be least visible through his clothing and not crinkle when he urinates, suggesting, as I have said before, that he has a future after politics making commercials for Depends. But the reason this is crucial is that's why I think they had to resort to the body double, that Joe couldn't go for 90 minutes without having his diaper changed. And with the body double they sent out actually has no earlobes. His ears come straight down and connect to his skin. Joe Biden has earlobes. James Woods was the first to notice that the body double has brown eyes. Joe Biden has blue eyes. Joe Biden has a wider face. The body double has a narrower. You got some background going on there, Paul. Plus, Joe Biden, not to make trivial or comparisons, ties his knot with a double Windsor, the body double with a single Windsor. And since Biden already has a skull implant, he didn't need a wire, but the body double was wearing one. So I really don't think there's any doubt about the fact that they brought out the body double. Now, it turns out that all three of the moderators that this election board chose have deep ties to the Democratic Party. I find this completely disgusting. I know you can say, what else would we expect, Paul? But we see again and again and again how massively even this election body that is supposed to be impartial is setting everything up tilted in favor of the Democrats. And I think at this point in time, they certainly do need help, because in my opinion, they're going to go down in a landslide. I mean, it's going to be unbelievable. We had Cory Booker actually on talking about with Hannity how things are going. I was surprised by his candor, because what he explained about the vote was so refreshing, telling, and I think correct. Let me give you a few of what he was imparting to Sean. When we looked at Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Michigan, we look where those numbers were. And 4 years ago, Donald Trump was down by a larger margin to Hillary Clinton than he is today to Joe Biden. And today, the Trafalgar poll in Michigan showed Donald Trump with a lead. It's the first time in 5 years he's been a candidate that he's had a lead in Michigan. He won that state 4 years ago by 10,704 votes. He's going to win it by a larger margin this time. And then he went on with even more details. Look, we're going to win in Arizona. As Republicans, we have a voter registration drive advantage here. The Democrats aren't talking about Texas anymore. The state of Ohio, and I shouldn't have to say this on live TV, it's out of play for the Democrats because of all the work and the jobs and manufacturing that's come back because of the president's policies. The great white whale for Republicans has always been the state of Pennsylvania, but that's where we are. We are not only competing in Pennsylvania, we're competing in the state of Minnesota, where no Republican has won since Richard Nixon's reelection in 1972. Donald Trump lost that state by about 45,000 votes, about a point and a half. That state is trending Republican. And because of the work that he's able to do up there, those people ought to come home. And Donald Trump is going to be the first president in about 50 years to win Minnesota as a Republican. Oh, we lost our internet, it appears, or so I'm being told.
Hey, I'm back. I'm back,
okay,
Jim.
Good, Mitchell. Good, Mitchell.
Hey, I just wanted to say right now that I wanted to put out a copyright on Dem Pens, adult briefs.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
That's okay. D-E-M-P-N-D-S, by the
All
way.
All right. Very good, Mitchell. Very good, Mitchell. Is Paul still with us, or was he lost, too, in the shuffle?
Not mayor.
Okay, very good. And by the way, Joe Biden's own campaign manager has indirectly confirmed what Corey Lewandowski was reporting on Hannity, to wit, by telling Biden followers that the polls are inflated, that the lead is not that great, and saying we need to campaign as though we were trailing because they actually are trailing. Paul, I don't know how much you keep up on polls and the like, but obviously it's pretty important if you can get accurate information, which most of these polls are not.
You want me to comment now?
Yeah.
So, you know, about all that you said, you know, it's interesting. I believe most of it. I only looked at the one photo that you had posted on your Twitter. Obviously it's somebody that's, you know, different, which is just, it's very weird. I mean, you know, I guess I don't have to keep reminding you of, you know, where we are down the river, so to speak, from the 60s and the 70s, which I know you remember well. I mean, I turned 14 years old, I believe, in 1970. So that'll give you an idea. So I was awake. I mean, I wasn't, I wasn't conscious politically, but I remember what things were like back then. And compare them to now, it's just we've crossed a river that I just don't think we should have ever crossed. I mean, remember when you first learned how, the press decided to keep the scandals and the liaisons of JFK quiet? Because, you know, it's just better that the American public does, you know, really know such things. And now, for I don't know how long, it's the complete opposite. You know, there's just anything and everything goes. It's the worst mudslinging fest you can imagine. And just the idea that this man, Joe Biden, is indeed a presidential candidate kind of says it all, in my opinion.
Oh, I agree. I mean, it's just disgusting that the Democratic Party should nominate such a guy. But I believe now we're uncovering an additional reason. Hillary and Barack wanted Joe to be the nominee because he's so deep in corruption with them that he would not be expected to reveal any of it without disclosing his own complicity. Giuseppe, I'm very pleased to see you here, my friend. Join the conversation.
Yeah, so far, great show. Just breaking news. And it's crazy with Biden. I don't understand his strategy whatsoever, appealing to the far left and the globalists. I mean, clearly a majority of people in this country do not want to go the way of the North American Union, go the way of validating burn, loot, and murder protests. And it's just insanity. And yet the power of the Trump derangement syndrome has got him, you know, neck and neck with Trump in the eyes of of real pollsters, and I think Trump's going to pull away now, but it is madness.
Oh, there's so much coming out, Giuseppe, now, and, you know, the social media giants are trying so desperately to suppress it that it's actually having the effect of drawing more attention to these revelations, because people want to know what it is that Twitter or Facebook and so forth, they're so desperately trying to suppress. So I think it's going to backfire, just as when NBC, during the town hall with Trump, moved a black woman into the camera range because they thought she'd be a Trump opponent and were upset when she wound up nodding every time the president spoke in agreement, so that their effort, you know, to subtly undermine his appearance was a complete failure and had the opposite result. I'm just telling you, I think this guy is so smart. He's so politically astute. He just continues to impress me day after day after day. And I know Paul, of course, is down on both parties. He thinks the whole system is corrupt. I'm dealing with the reality of the situation. We have two parties here in the U.S. And at this historical moment, there is no doubt about it that Donald Trump is overwhelmingly better for the country than Joe Biden and his corrupt entourage.
Go ahead, Paul.
You get no argument. I was going to say, you get no argument out of me about on that particular point. There's just, you know, that's, I don't know. What can you say? Of course, you know, it's just, I think everybody that's listening to this call, including Giuseppe, who's on the call, sees the other part of the greater point of where we're at. But
you don't have to defend yourself. You're on here day after day after day making the same point over and over. We all understand where you stand. You think the whole system is corrupt. We get it. The point I'm making, I think, is rather more palpable, rather more relevant. Namely, we're in the midst of a crucial election where the fate of the nation is going to make a decisive turn. If it goes for Biden with his permanent mask mandate, you probably will have the fulfillment of the Deagle prediction that 2/3 of the American population is going to be dead within 5 years, because wearing these masks is a way of slowly killing ourselves. There can be no doubt about it. The evidence is there, and it's overwhelming. At the very least, you ought to be supporting Trump vigorously on that account to avoid the inevitable mask mandate coming from the mentally deranged Joe Biden, should he, by some fluke, manage to occupy the office of the presidency.
Yeah.
Okay, we got a new call here from Dean. Go ahead, Dean. Join the conversation.
Hey, how's it going?
Very good.
You just got me thinking when you were talking about the state of Donald Trump in the U.S. There was an interview done a while back on a popular YouTube channel, Valuetainment. And there was a guy who was a forecaster on there. And he was essentially talking about how his forecasting method was based on the idea of forecasting who's going to be the next president in an election, in the style of predicting, say, an earthquake, where you have a certain number of keys where it doesn't matter how you get to these like rules or keys being triggered. But if all six are like triggered, essentially it says that person is not going to be the president. And it's very interesting, as the interview was going on, Donald Trump, when he reviewed it, had triggered all of the keys. And when the interviewer was essentially going, yeah, but this, yeah, but that, there was a genuine excuse for each of them or reason why that key was triggered. The guy said, doesn't matter. It's been triggered. And I just think the whole push before evidence comes out to the Democrats is just completely working around theory, prediction theory of how you get any president out. So no matter who they are. And I think that's what they're working on.
Well, you may be alluding to the very good work of Carole King about bad polls and good polls explaining the art of polling, because she identified 7 different indicators that have been highly reliable in predicting the outcome of elections. Let me run through them ever so briefly to see if it corresponds. First, no incumbent who's received at least 75% of the primary vote has lost re-election. Donald Trump received 94% of the primary vote, the 4th highest of all time. Second, Every candidate since 1988 who led in enthusiasm won the election. This year, Pew gives Trump a 20% lead in enthusiasm. Three, a majority of poll experts expect Trump to win, and the expectation question has proven more accurate historically than voter intention question. Four, beginning in 2004, the candidate who led in Google searches has won the election. Trump beats Biden in Google searches by ratio of 3-1. Five, the maximum time a successful candidate to become president has served in the Senate is 15 years. Joe Biden has served 36. Six, no former president has taken longer than 14 years to get from the gubernatorial or Senate victory to the presidency again. Biden's been around. This is his third run for the presidency over 36 years. Finally, Donald Trump is even ahead in many of the cookie election polls that run in various states and fairs and have the candidate's image frosted on cookies, jousting for the most bought cookie in battleground states. Trump, again, is in the lead. I don't know, Dean, if those were similar to the ones you were talking about, but it seemed to me those are very, very telling.
They were. I have to say they were different ones, but it's interesting how there is a different split. The set of keys that were this guy's keys were purely focused on if you're like the sitting president. There was a slight riff off of that, and it had Donald Trump tripping all the keys, in other words, losing, despite the fact that there's all these positives. Do you know what I mean? If you used to pit the two together, like head to head.
You're telling me they were claiming that Trump, that by these six indicators, Trump is going to lose?
That's right.
Really? Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And it was very interesting because it just works like I was saying, like the way you predict. This is like the way they think of it, predicting earthquakes, as in you just focus on the sitting president, the current president. And that is the only like area you focus on. And that's how you predict what keys are being tripped or triggers are being tripped. Now, it's interesting because, as you say, when you actually look at a method that pits the two together, the two presidents, Trump looks like he's in a good position, doesn't he? Like you were saying.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, I'm predicting a Trump landslide. I've even gone so far as to suggest he could carry all 50 states. And I'll tell you, I have reports from California. People are very disillusioned with their Governor Newsom, who's been a Betty tyrant. There are lots of Trump signs out showing up in California. That was never the case in the past. People are openly contemptible of the Democrats and supportive of the president because he's going to give them their life back. I think this is true across the country. New York, Governor Cuomo committed major blunders early on, like setting active COVID patients into homes for the elderly, nursing homes, and killed a couple tens of thousands, as I recall, as a consequence. It was all outrageous. And the damage.
Now, that is not absolutely true. You cannot make that claim. We've discussed many times here about this so-called virus.
Paul, let me come back to that, okay? Hold your horses.
All right.
Now, de Blasio, right. New York City has created a wasteland, and all the wealthy are leaving New York City. The best department stores are boarded up. It's been a catastrophe for New York. New Yorkers see it. There was just an Antifa riot in Ithaca, and the police didn't step in. We've had these in Portland, just as we've had them in Seattle, and I say every time there's one of these riots, that's 100,000 more votes for Donald Trump. Yes, we can talk about the COVID and whether it even exists, Paul, till we're blue in the face. I know that. I'm talking about the popular understanding of what happened here, not some high-sensitive view that you would like to impose on every discussion, okay?
No, I'm not imposing the view,
Paul,
but when I hear somebody...
Giuseppe, your thoughts.
Okay, good.
I think it's fascinating that Dean has brought up those six keys. And another interesting thing is that you go by the Las Vegas betting money, and there's a lot of money still going on Biden, whereas at this time 4 years ago, a lot of money had gone on Trump. So I don't know that I believe it will be a landslide. It may turn out to be, especially if the Biden – Hunter Biden raping and beating up 12-year-old Chinese girl actually comes out in a public video form, then he's toast. But right now, right. I'd say they're very close.
Well, of course, we have a disagreement in our expectations, but that's just fine. We'll see how it plays out. In less than 2 weeks, we'll have a confirmation or falsification of our respective projections. Paul, I'm not shutting you up. I just don't like for you to interfere when I'm trying to explain a point, all right? And if it's not you want to maintain, so be it, right? I'm very glad to have Dean on here because he's offering a fresh and diverse point of view. Dean, are you in the UK?
Yeah, that's right. So I have no vote in the race.
Well, I'm very, very glad. Yeah, I'm very glad you called in. I hope you will again. What more would you like to add?
I think that it was basically summed up. I think the simple point I'm making is this, and it goes along with what the last person just said. There seems to be a rush to get evidence out on the opposition of Trump. And I'm just getting the feeling, based off this interview, I'll drop the link in the chat. I'm just getting this feeling that essentially the own democratic apparatus and the deep state are ignoring a head-to-head methodology and essentially trying to rush in the environment to ensure through prediction that the sitting president will lose the election so they don't have to rig it, essentially. Before the evidence gets out, because remember, evidence has to get out. It then has to be verified, and that means it's a longer timeline. Do you see what I mean? Before you can actually get it out to the masses and stamp it, basically, you know, and get everyone on side.
Well, Dean, I think the president has been under attack for 3 solid years here, nonstop. Even before his inauguration, you had Russiagate, you had Ukrainegate, you had the fake impeachment, you had the coronavirus. You've had one thing after another dumped on Trump, and none of it has worked. And I tell you, none of it's going to work. And I think he's not only going to be reelected, but by a healthy margin, I even believe, as you all know now, and I've said it before right here on this show, it could be a grand slam. He could take all, in my opinion, he could take all 50 states.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it, that the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes, that Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
All right. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
I've just received an article about the 15 countries with the highest average IQ in the world, which fits into certain issues we've been discussing in the past. Let me run through them briefly and add a comment and then open it up. China, number 15, average IQ 100. Belgium, average IQ 100. UK, average IQ 100. New Zealand, average IQ 100. Switzerland, average IQ 101. Sweden, average IQ 101. Germany, average IQ 102. Italy, average IQ 102. Austria, average IQ 102. Netherlands, average IQ 102. Singapore, average IQ 103. Taiwan, average IQ 104. That's number four. Japan, average IQ 105. South Korea, average IQ 106. And Hong Kong, average IQ 107. Now notice, all the countries not included there, in particular the United States, have an IQ lower than 100, or they would have been included. And where I've observed, in my opinion, the effect of the mask is going to cause an average drop in the American intelligence of 5 points. Look how devastating that's going to be. Giuseppe, I want to invite your comments.
Well, what is the source of that list?
Well, let me find it here because I just arrived, and I'll add it. I mean, I might take... have questions about some of that, but it's certainly interesting for our debate.
The averages are only interesting if they're segregated by race, okay? So U.S. and Britain and Germany, the averages among white people will be much higher because those populations there contain lots
of blacks. Yeah, I'm sure that's true, Paul. Here it says, find out which nations are the brainiest of all, where the countries with the highest IQ. It doesn't really say. Parallels have often been drawn between IQ and workforce abilities, and in turn, the wealth of nation and social well-being. It's arguable, though, how accurate it is to consider average IQ to determine how smart or not a country is. There are various other factors. Paul's included a very important one, the racial variable. So I don't see the source there, Giuseppe. I'll share it with you, and we can figure it out.
Well, yeah, it's certainly interesting, but I mean, the larger the country, the more diluted it will be, as Paul said. I mean, and the other thing that's interesting is how the Asian focused on math and rigorous academic training, where America's academic program now is an absolute joke with this Common Core disaster and with the Sovietization of our mass education, as Charlotte Isherbeet has documented so brilliantly the last 20 years. I mean, it's pretty sad.
The dumbing down of America, yes.
Right, yeah.
Dean, I got to say, you know, normally I don't have a strenuous exchange like this and one with Paul here today. He calls in very frequently, and we usually have a more cordial conversation. But today, somehow he triggered me. Dean, you're from Austin. I'm so pleased to have you here. Dean.
Oh, thanks. Thanks a lot. No worries. I think you're doing all okay. It's fine.
If Dean has heard the show before, I'm sure he's seen it. If I can quickly just address a couple of points, Jim. Okay, so
sure.
Number one, so you said something to me which almost triggered me. I do want to respond to that. I should be vigorously campaigning for Trump, and I got to laugh at that. I can't even get people to take off their damn mask in 90-degree weather for a virus that hasn't been isolated, that you can't test for. And that doesn't make people sick. Okay, so how can I convince somebody to vote for somebody like Trump? I will give you a California anecdote. It's just the other day I was at the supermarket.
Yeah.
And here's this guy, a Mexican guy, with a Trump shirt that says Latinos for Trump. It's all in red. He's got a cap on that's like Trump, make America great again. And his face rag, his face scarf, his face mask is a custom bandana that's blue with Trump written in red letters, you know?
Okay.
And he's having a conversation with one of the clerks there. And as I'm leaving, you know, I make a mention to the sign, and I point out, I go, you know, this sign is fraud because there's no state mandate and blah, blah, blah. So we started talking, and he was interested, and we went outside. He pulled his mask off, and I started to educate him about the virus. And he shows me pictures of how he has a group get together and wave their Trump flags over this overpass that I actually know pretty well. It's about four exits down on the freeway, and he says he does it every Friday, and he invited me to go, and we actually exchanged emails. And here was a guy, and he wasn't quote-unquote Latino. He was clearly Mexican, but he's been here a long time. He actually put 25 years in this supermarket. He recently retired in his early 50s because he was tired of working the night shift. I'm well aware that, look, here's the tell, and I sent this to Giuseppe just recently, right, that if Biden wins, we know what we're looking at, okay? We know it's fake, it's false. If Trump wins, that should be the norm, that should be expected. I just have expressed the sentiments, that I don't need to defend them, and you tell me I'm on here all the time, but only when it comes up, is it? I have yet to be convinced that the whole thing with Trump is 100% real. What percentage it is, I don't know. I do think that there's a lot of things about him that are authentic, but he has said some very troubling things, especially regarding vaccines. So having said that, I am mostly in agreement with you, Jim. Okay? Thank you.
Fair enough. Mitchell had an interesting comment. Trump tells a reporter Biden is a criminal and you're an accomplice for not reporting it. I think that's actually correct.
Wow.
This evidence in criminal activities that if the reporters are suppressing it, they actually are covering up a crime, which is itself a criminal act. So I think there's something to be said that the media, Twitter, and Facebook and so forth, they're going so far out of their way to suppress it. It's completely outrageous. Dean, is there any freedom of speech left in the UK? My impression is it's even worse there than it is here.
It actually is. We've just had a new precedent example come out that's gone one beyond the Scottish guy that taught the girlfriend's dog the Nazi salute as a joke. We've actually gone one further. We've gone one further. We have had a historian who's very famous in the media. Oh, sorry. Yeah, there is some beeping going on. Oh, there, that's better.
Good, Dean. Thanks.
Oh, way better.
Dean, are you still there?
So,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm still here. Yeah, yeah. So we have had an issue with freedom of speech recently. That's a new precedent. So we had the Nazi dog thing. But after that, what we've had is a famous historian known as David Starkey. He's an expert in the Tudor monarchy. He's made many appearances on television over many decades. He had an interview on YouTube with a younger guy, about 27 years old, who essentially is right of center conservative in political viewpoint. During that interview, David Starkey was discussing and getting carried away in his academic mindset and was insensitive and distasteful in the way he described the fact that he considered a genocide to be to have more higher deaths than what slavery of Africans caused in deaths, to then consider it a genocide of note in world history. Now, he said it in a callous way, but here's the problem with the free speech. He was essentially cancelled and all of his titles and prestige was completely removed, overnight wiped. But here's the thing. The police service not only contacted him and he's in trouble, but they also contacted his interviewer. And they actually said to the interviewer, you must voluntarily turn up to the police station for an interview. Otherwise, we're going to arrest you and charge you on a law that was brought in by Margaret Thatcher in 1986 that was to do with stirring up racial tension towards people. So it was a completely academic conversation, not targeted towards hating a minority. And it's to do with dealing with civil disturbances based on racial hatred. And it went way back in the 80s. They actually used that to drag this poor guy in for an interview again, just over free speech. It was terrible.
You must voluntarily put a mask on. Otherwise, we're going to arrest you. You know, it's just insane. Insane. I feel bad for you guys over there.
There's a question. According to Tom Perez, who's the head of the DNC, Biden's ahead of Trump in Ohio, 45-44, in Nevada, 48-42, in Wisconsin, 46-41, in Pennsylvania, 50-45, in Florida, 49-45. These are manufactured numbers, I guarantee you 100%. Dean, I don't know in the back. You got that noise off before. I don't know if you can get it out.
It's the guy with the red T-shirt on in your chat. That's the person's name.
That was me. That was Giuseppe because I went to mail your donation check at the post office, and then I was I'm under a lot of deadline. I've been hired to create a workable Joe Biden urine leakage sensor, and it's working.
Well, it is ridiculous. See, that's why they're going to send out. I swear to God, it was the decision by the Trump campaign to not allow breaks every 30 minutes that forced them to bring out the body double because Joe Biden couldn't go 90 minutes without changing his adult diaper. I'm convinced that's what is going on. And Giuseppe, let me mention that you and I and Scorpio are going to do a live broadcast of what turns out to be the second, though originally scheduled as the third presidential debate on Thursday. You'll be able to catch it on Twitter. Giuseppe and I and Scorpio will be there, and we'll certainly share our thoughts and reflections about what's taking place on the stage.
Jim, it'll be also on Facebook and YouTube, and if I can figure it out, it will also be on the new Rising Tide Media website as an embedded code. So if I get that working, it's going to be in a lot of places now.
Well, Giuseppe, you're doing a great job with all of this. And let me just say here how much I appreciate your talking me into resuming a daily news update in the new format of Need to Know. You really made the difference, Giuseppe. Without you, I would not have continued to do this. I have so many demands on my time, but I consider it so important. When you made it possible to do, I was delighted to pursue it, and I'm just very grateful to you for that.
Well, Jim, it was I felt necessary for real journalism, real commentary, lucid analysis that is so lacking in the fake news globalist propaganda worldwide that, you know, if only more people are not, this is really something, Jim. I forgot to tell you this, but I'll tell it now. When I looked at our numbers on the YouTube channel, which is, I repurposed my Giuseppe channel. It's now called Giuseppe Vaffangulo Need to Know. And last Wednesday, we were at 521 subscribers. We had grown a lot. And I looked today, and they had cut us down to 84.
Yeah, fascinating. Giuseppe, I'll bet we've been a whole lot better higher than that, and they keep cutting down the numbers. So no, we will not realize the reach we have and the degree of enthusiasm for what we're doing.
Yeah, that's true. I keep crossing my fingers for a viable, patriotic, open source, censor-free YouTube competitor that actually allows content providers like us to monetize it. I'm surprised that isn't out yet. And with blockchain, it is possible. I hope we see that sooner than later.
Let me bring Paul back in. I want to give him a chance to say his piece on whatever subject he wants to address. Paul, go ahead. The forum is yours.
Okay, well, also in defense of Hunter Biden, if he didn't actually give crack to the underage girls, I think it's a little bit less serious of an offense. Okay, so I'm glad I got a laugh. Okay, there. That's all I wanted was just a little bit of laugh from the
Hunter. That's good. That's good, Paul. Yeah, Hunter is a weak link in the chain. I mean, Joe Biden is, you know, pretty much senile. They're using the double. It's not the same guy. It's fascinating. But Hunter, I think this is a whole new avenue of corruption. And just as the article implied, this is really not what Biden's handlers want to have as the family introduction for the American people. Just 2 weeks out from the election, I think the timing could not be worse for them.
Right. And I do have a couple other things to say, but what I also wanted to mention is that's probably almost as good, Jim, as our email exchange when I sent you the photos of the possible gorilla man or chimpanzee man hybrid there in Africa. And you told me that interspecies procreation was not possible.
Yeah.
And if you remember my reply, I said, okay, great, I can get rid of the condoms then.
You can get rid of the...
Never mind. It was in the email, Jim. I will mention briefly, okay, just for the fun of it, Mona sent me and you, and I believe some others, but I know she included me and you on the list, a video that's put out by this guy, Jeff Berwick. You've probably seen his videos before, the Dollar Vigilante. And he read some documents which were supposedly, made public by a guy, a member of some governmental body up there, some parliament, for example. He was apparently in privy on these planning meetings for what they're going to do in Canada coming up. And I think it's worth
Go through that. That was really stunning stuff. Go ahead.
Right. Yeah, it wasn't as stunning as it was sobering to realize that these people are not going to let this go. So I hope and I pray, I might even pray, do more than cross my fingers that you're absolutely right about Trump and that he's going to stop this crap. Because what I think it is they have in mind, once they've seen the amount of compliance that's observable, is they're going to ramp this up. They're going to have a second wave and a third wave. They're going to have more lockdowns. They're gonna ratchet down the business closings. They're gonna do the whole mask mandate thing again, and they're gonna get even more people in health problems and depressed and losing their jobs and their livelihoods, and just continue with this slow, steady strangulation. Because I don't really feel they would have started this if they didn't want to continue it. Well, okay, I don't think it's the kind of thing you just start up and then stop it.
Are the American people not going to figure out that depriving their bodies of oxygen is not a good thing and that they're killing themselves slowly, that it's a version of the boiling frog? If you only turn up the temperature 1 degree at a time, he's cooked before he knows it.
Okay, so I'll just mention briefly a conversation I had with a fellow man at the, and I think I did it the last call, but he works out at a gym over here. It used to be Gold's Gym, but then they were bought out by this place called American Barbell. It's a huge facility. There's also a fairly large facility nearby, 24 Hour Fitness. Okay, they're a few miles apart. And you could go there anytime and see people running on the treadmill and lifting weights and sweating wearing face masks. Why? Because they have to, because the business owner is under the delusion that the county requires it. Meanwhile, if you go online and you read the order, okay, of the county health officer, they refer to the state guidance over and over again about the guidance, the guidance, the guidance. This is the so-called health order from the county health officer. So everything is a fraud. The people are indeed too stupid to see it, and they're not man enough to stop. I mean, the bottom line is you can't make me wear a mask, okay? It's going to be a fist fight or a knife fight or a gun fight. I'm not putting on a goddamn mask, but guess what? The average person isn't made like that. And like I said, I'm 175 pounds on a regular basis, 178 after a full meal. But guess what? You're not making me put on a mask, and generally no two men can do it, probably three. But that's not what the average American person is showing themselves to be, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's astounding, Paul, astounding. I mean, I know how far-reaching it is. People I care about, people I love, are eager to wear masks, notwithstanding that it's doing them harm. So I'm profoundly concerned about the future of the country. When I talk about the Deagle projections, I mean, I'm telling you, we're talking about going from over 300 million today as we speak to fewer than 100 million 5 years from now. So look around, because two out of three on the average of people you know are not going to be here in 5 years if this holds up. And it appears to me the mask wearing is the way, one of the ways, along with 5G, that it's going to happen.
Now, by the way, just full disclosure, so that was my little bit of emotional reaction to your query to me of, don't you think the American people are going to blah, blah, blah. So, however, I will say this. I do wear a mask when I go to the post office. I hang it below my nose, and I don't want to get into a hassle with the post office, because that's where I mail my certified mail to the various business owners and CEOs that I'm trying to, you know, get to comply with the law. And that's really all I'm trying to do, is I'm trying to get them to comply with existing law, because guidance, protocol, and all these other so-called orders aren't law at all. And that's the illusion that, unfortunately, these all these people are laboring under. And it's hard to correct, because just like Giuseppe referenced with Charlotte Iserbutt, Iserby, I believe is the name, that the dumbing down of America, it's all been on purpose. The average person has no concept that we don't have so-called leaders or rulers. We have public servants and employees, and that's the attitude we have to take.
Well, Dane County, where I reside, has a mask mandate, and there are any number of shops and so forth. I habituate where I have to wear a mask or they won't let me in. So I do just as you do. I wear it beneath my nose so it won't actually obstruct my breathing. But it's true for the Quick Trip. It's only a mile from my house, from the local grocery store that's a mile and a block. I mean, it's embarrassing that they have these, and everyone in there is wearing the mask in full compliance, but mine beneath my nose, and I just, you know, I'll deal with it if someone confronts me about it. Actually, I have a medical condition. When I wear the mask, I can't breathe. It's amazing to me what a difference it makes to me immediately when I am got my nose covered with a mask, Paul. You may have noticed. I mean, it's a discernible difference immediately.
It's so annoying and restricting, and to me, I can't take it. Here's a fact that I don't ever use, but I had childhood asthma. I went to the doctor and even the hospital multiple times. I did the whole thing with the inhalers and that room, you know, that thing you put in the room, what you call it, there was a term for it, I can't remember it, but it's this thing you buy, you know, and you have the water in it, so it's supposed to help you. I got desensitization shots as a kid for so-called allergies, and I was finally able just to overcome all these problems when I started swimming when I was 14 years old. But I have like a borderline panic attack, really, when you restrict my breathing.
Yeah.
I can't take it.
Very justifiable and good. That's your own body warning you that something you're doing is harmful to your body. Let me close out the conversation by inviting Dean to take a couple minutes here. And then Giuseppe and Paul, you've been excellent. Go ahead, Dean, a few thoughts of yours.
I just wanted to dart back to a previous topic you were mentioning, which is the IQs, the average IQs.
Yeah.
On that list, I didn't hear Finland. Is that correct?
Yes, I didn't hear Finland either. Yes, I agree. Yeah. That's surprising.
The reason why I'm bringing up Finland is probably to do with the theory you're putting across about decreasing IQ rates. Finland has the best educational system in the world for schools. And you'll notice they don't make the rankings for the average. So what that's telling me is that IQ is heavily dependent upon early age nutrition and other learning outside of a regular school system, no matter how advanced and sophisticated the education system is, because the school environment in Finland is almost healthy. It's that good. Emotional intelligence is even good.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing I'd also add to this as well is I noticed I didn't hear Russia on the list.
Yeah.
We talked about mathematics. Now, Russia, through the academies, including military academies for even if you join the Navy in St. Petersburg, for the school system, the mathematics is advanced, but they're not on the list for average. So what I would do is I would take the average data that you've presented, but I'd also try and find some data that looks at percentages on upper and lower extreme data. So as in ultra high IQ and ultra low IQ, and then see what countries come up in those rankings. It might be that somewhere like Russia has the super high IQs, but not a great average.
That's very interesting. Yeah, no, I really introduced it more as a conversation piece, given the discussion we've had in the past about IQ, rather than as a serious scientific commentary, which Giuseppe very appropriately asked the origins of it, which we need to explore. Dean, I'm really pleased you've been here today. Giuseppe, you get the final word today.
Oh, I think Dean's brilliant. He should call more often. The idea of childhood nutrition from birth to age six is so vital. That's why the black underclass has its generational trap of because they're not getting nutrition, and people with money have such an advantage when the children, well, first and foremost, you should breastfeed, but then you put them on real food, organic, natural food. That's so true. And lastly, I would like to point out that, this is politically incorrect, but we don't need to turn to Trump or anyone to take back this country. We, as men and women of the sovereign republic of the United States, need to demand this. These parasites, these minions of the parasites, the despicable cowards like Northam in New York and Whitmer in Michigan and Fredo Cuomo in New York and the twit Newsom in California. We need the sheriffs. We need real, real men and women. We got to take this back ourselves. It's insane to expect government to do it for us. Government is doing it to us.
Great, great comment, Giuseppe. Perfect conclusion. Thanks all for being here, and thank you all.
Thank you for listening to Revolution.